The theme for the afternoon talk is Mind the Gap, End the Gap. In the initial part of the talk with you this afternoon, I would like to speak for a few minutes about some of the key concepts which we are using here, give some general outline of their meaning and application. The three or four words which I have in mind, one is mindfulness, the second is concentration, the third is meditation, and the fourth is thought. With mindfulness, we have this remarkable capacity to bring some energy to consciousness, and when there is some presence of that and other factors as well, it enables us to be mindful of. We could say in the metaphorical language, we shed light upon. And in this shedding light upon, looking at, here of course it's the breath and the body, in shedding light upon and looking at, in that relationship of the subject, the one who looks, and the object, it provides the potential to see more than what is initially apparent. Do you understand? I bring mindfulness to the object, I take an interest in it, I bring light to it, so to speak, and it will begin to reveal more than what I first notice. If you are out in the garden, you go to a plant, a flower, and you just sit and you quietly bring your attention to that flower will reveal more. It will reveal more of itself. You will see more of the flower, the colour, the shape, the leaves. You will see the flower in relationship to the earth. You will have a sense of the flower and its roots beneath the earth. And see more beauty and form and colour within the flower. It will might remind you of the ecology of life, its interconnectedness with the earth, the importance for the bees and for the butterflies and birds and other insects. So mindfulness is the ability to bring our attention to an object, look carefully at that, and to see what can be revealed through it. With the application of that mindfulness, when it begins to develop there, then the language just changes a little bit and there is more concentration upon. There is meditation upon, and I'll speak about that in a moment or two. It is not the teaching of mindfulness to just to be in the present moment as much as possible or all the time. That is, it's too limited. So what that means is there are times, both here and elsewhere, where there may be a memory which arises. And the mindfulness, if there is some foundation of calmness and clarity, may just turn its attention to the memory. That memory which is standing out, if it's coming from a calm, clear place, therefore mindfulness is quietly turning attention, you will be able to see the memory. Recognize a little bit more of the circumstances. But if in that turning of the attention to the memory there is agitation and eruption there, that agitation and eruption will disturb and prevent the ability to see the memory. what you will actually see is your view about it, the unhappiness about it, the agitation about it, the disappointment about it, if it is a painful memory. And in a similar way, in our mindfulness practice, if we turn the attention to the memory and a happy and joyful memory arises, and we'll speak more detail about that tomorrow with you, to recognize the preciousness of that, not to bring a lot of thought into it and try to add it and build it up to more than what it was, and to recognize human beings have this wonderful and precious capacity for mindfulness, to go to memory, to see quietly what was there, perhaps recognize and learn something from that, or just simply appreciate it and recognize it without anything coming out of the being which is agitating it by inflating it or reacting to it or getting agitated about it. So we give plenty of care and attention in our practice to mindfulness, shedding light on the moment, but we're not excluding the two other fields of time, which is past and future. Similarly, with regard to the future, we are engaged in the meditations, sitting, walking, standing and reclining, and in that engagement in it, we may well have some thoughts about the future. Sometimes the thought about the future may show itself for us in a simple planning. I would like to do this, I would like to do that. The actuality of it is valid if it's clearly in relationship to the present. There, it's not a fantasy. And whatever the event which you have some thought about in the future, it is genuinely close to the present. Because life is a constant activity which constantly interrupts the best plans. Do not imagine in the gap between the present and the future, you or I can sustain the intention, because there is a reasonably high possibility that the gap will, if it's a big gap in time for the moment, it will get broken. And then you're going to feel disappointed. You created this great idea, this great plan, this great hope, this great optimism with regard to the future, and then you wonder why you feel disappointed, why you've let yourself down, and maybe others as well. One forgot to mind the gap. So the relationship to the present of the future, but similarly, the same principle is with regard to the past. We should not think that because we go into the past, days, weeks, months, years, and decades, that we are remembering actually and really what happened. Do not be so conceited to think one knows exactly what happened. It is not easy to be able to know very carefully and precisely what was really old and long childhood, babyhood, teenage life or whatever, and all the description that may go along with it, trauma being the most commonly used word these days, and a few others. And what happens if we are not minding the gap, the gap in time, going back a long way, we may imagine, we may think, we know what's going on or what did happen, but actually the imagination and the thought, either to underestimate it or exaggerate it, either direction, that reaction of the imagination entering into the past, and we actually think we are looking at the past, we're not. We're looking at the imagination and the thought and the concept about it. It is no easy matter to bridge the gap. It is no easy matter to have a steadiness in life from present into the future and be extremely clear about our relationship to gaps, in this case called past and future, and in that relationship to gaps there, be very careful because there can be a crash. You fall down the gap. Sometimes the conditioned habit with regard to the past, of the way of looking at it, not sometimes, often, the way of looking at one's past can be a much greater problem and issue than the event. The way of looking at the future can be a much greater problem than the event. Even here, some of you know, oh, I can't, that won't last 7 days. I've never gone 7 days not speaking to people. I can't sit more than 5 minutes cross-legged. I hate vegan food. I've never been up at 6 o'clock in the morning in my life. I won't last 10 minutes. This is all fears of the future before coming for some people. I hear the stories. We all hear the stories. And sometimes the arrival, and as the teacher was talking earlier today, sometimes there is a real shift, not for everybody, of course, of settling in. The projections about what it will be like, hopes and fears, and one settles in and we think, what the hell was all that fantasy and projection and imagination about before arriving here? It's just a small group of people here sitting on their ass being silent. I mean, what's the fuss about? So that, if that applies in just coming on a retreat, if that applies from the present to the future, as one example here, I'm saying, mind the gap. There are aspects, in this case called past, present, future, here primarily, of course, with the present. The sustaining of the mindfulness brings the samadhi. And sam means coming together, di is on the particular. So our quiet ability in a relaxed way to be mindful of and stay quietly with the object, in this case called breath or body, is a factor towards keeping concentrated on. And in a relaxed way, mindful in a relaxed way, it is truly meditative. It is meditating on. Mindfulness with calmness and concentration, there is a meditation on life and breathing, a meditation on experiencing of the body, a meditation there on relaxing the whole body. It is a meditation upon. And this meditating upon there places us directly in touch with the experience, as mentioned to you yesterday, without the image, and there is this bare experience. But it goes further than that. Because in the relationship to life, human beings need something in life, some things, shall we say, in life, which are truly worth concentrating on. And if I am, as a human being, willing to explore this life and to ask myself deeply, what in life is worth concentrating on? And therefore, I will need the mindfulness. I will need to be a conscious human being. I will need to have a priority. This is worth concentrating on, whatever it might be. And I'll need the mindfulness, the interest, the curiosity, and the development of concentration, that's the sustaining of mindfulness which makes us concentrated, and to see what in life is worth concentrating on. Surely it would be worth finding out. So when we look at the breath and we look at the experience of things, it's the preparation, therefore it has a symbolic significance, it is a preparation for other areas of life to stay steady with. I mean, to give you a very small example, not showing off or anything like that. That I'm a small servant of the Dharma, this is what I do. And when I was a monk, people, Westerners and others, who for the first year or two it was bliss, because in the monastery I was the only Westerner, and I was very happy not to be in the company of the Westerners, and I could have a nice silent life because I didn't have to talk in Thai because I didn't learn the language, and just the translator. Then after a period I disrobed, so then I became a lame person, and then people would say to me, when I was a monk, oh, you're so lucky, you can practice as long as you wish, you're a monk, you get really looked after in your monastery in the south of Thailand. And then I disrobed. Oh, you're so lucky, Christopher, you're a single man, you haven't got a relationship, you haven't got all the intensity, which it doesn't have anyway, of being in a relationship. Yeah. And then I got into a relationship. Oh, Christopher, you're so lucky, you're in a relationship, and you and her are in a relationship, and you're both Dharma teachers, and it's so much easier for you. Then I got in a relationship with a person who wasn't in the, oh, you're so lucky, you can live your independent life, etc. And then my partner got pregnant there. So then I had a child. Oh, you're so lucky, you're in a good relationship and you've got a partner looking after your child. And then the partner left because she needed some space there. So then I'm a single parent or a co-parent, like that. So how, I'm using it as an example, how easy it is to keep viewing the other. You're so lucky, you're so lucky, you're so luck. There's no such thing in luck in this world. Luck has no truth to it. The point being here, sometimes in life, some things, servant of the Dharma, are worth concentrating on quietly and purposefully, despite being a monk, despite being a single man, despite being in relationships, despite being parents in the same household, in spite being a single parent, despite being a grandfather of a daughter, a single mum with four kids, etc., or whatever. Some things in life are worth staying steady and true with, while still living the rest of one's life, but one's concentrated on something. Same question, what in life is worth concentrating on? And it will mean sacrifice. It will mean letting go. People say to me, oh, and it's another one. Oh, Christopher, you're so lucky, you come to Israel, you go to Palestine, you go to India, you go to Australia, well, I can't remember the other places they go, Germany, and what a lovely, wonderful life. Try living it. Try living it without getting on a train to go to the continent or a plane, and the longest time I've been at home in England since 1977 is 11 weeks. Try living a life where you're going from one place to another, not to holiday, but to listen day in and day out to a lot of suffering. Oh, Christopher, you're so lucky. It's a quiet concentration dedication there, and people ask me, and they ask me even more these days, are you going to retire, Christopher? Death. It's going to be one long rest, I can promise you. And if it's not death, then one of two other things will happen, or simultaneously. Either the mind will go, or the body will deteriorate. Gets me one, two, or death. That would do the stopping, as far as I can see. But only, not to show off, statement of fact, quietly staying steady and true to something, despite all those things that we have to deal with in the daily life. And I do say, in being here, the mindfulness practices, recognizing it has a wonderful application to the past, near past is better, because it's less of a gap in time. Wonderful application to the present, and the wonderful application to the future, and nearer to the present, because it's more likely we can follow through with it. So we use our grounding principle, as you've been hearing from the good teachers while here, for the steadiness there, not only for the present, so we can quietly turn when we need to do that. And make our life, if I may say, as said earlier, mindfulness concentration, but in many ways, rather meditative. Yeah. And there's much to quietly meditate on. And our arts and music and poetry is not just to have some exciting sensations there. It is to meditate on, to see what touches us, to see what nourishes us, so we can stay quietly focused through this experience of life. Let's have a water with some leaf in it. The staff really look after us. We should have been around our place earlier on. Chocolate, biscuits. Christmas comes early in Israel. I could tell you some stories about visits to Israel. Goodness me. Okay. However, it's not the subject of the cover. Despite the madness of those people in the Knesset, do not ask me about them. But the delights and the sweetnesses and the joys of coming here, and the very good spirit. And it's, I must say this, I know I'm not supposed to compare, but it's much easier to speak firmly and directly here in Israel than it is in California. Not easy. I went to California for 25 years. I mean, I've given enough retreats there. It's not an easy place for freedom of speech. That's my. So sometimes it's like with the talk yesterday, a 15-minute rant and protest at human behavior and kind. What would have happened when I did those kind of things in California, there would be notes up on the board. I haven't come here to get a lecture from you Englishman. Okay, yeah. I've only come here to learn some relaxation. And then people would come, there are rather a lot of rich people in California. It's tragic, really. So a lot of these, do you know SUVs? You know, these vehicles, they're rather large, they're called SUVs. You know, Jeeps and bigger vehicles. Yeah, bigger vehicles. And there were quite a lot in the car park. I could see them. And I said, I trust you all know what SUV stands for. It stands for Simply Useless Vehicle. More notes. Etc. But here, there's a kind of, I like the spirit of being able to, like yesterday, not a single note. Could be disappointing in another way, you know, they're not interested. All right, we'll get back to the theme for a moment. So, we apply the mindfulness practice. We look at, we develop the mindfulness, we get more concentrated. But we're not just mindfulness and concentration, we're also being, it's a meditation, we meditate on things there. And as a theme with the talk with you is, please, please mind the gap. And one gap, which I want to take a few minutes and touched upon with a handful of you in the small group today is, there is something which I want in life there. And therefore, here I am as the human being, and there is that which I want, and perhaps that which I want, it has a name to it, whatever word or words that you give. So there is a gap. I am here, I want to be there, whatever that might be, and I experience the gap. In that gap, the primary intention with the gap, clearly, is to bridge the gap. I wish to end this gap between where I am and where I would like to be, how I would like to be, or whatever that might be about. It's normal human beings. What is important is, what is it that I've got in my mind here? And especially, as in another world will say, what am I bringing to the table? And what that means is, what is it inside of me which I am bringing into the gap to bridge the gap? You understand? If I just have, I want this, and inside of me there's a lot of wanting, neediness, craving, demanding, expectation, and pressure inside of me, that will enter into the gap, and that entering into the gap will place pressure on myself and pressure on the others, and more pressure on getting what I want. And the outcome of that will be views of success and failure. We do not have to live this life with any notion of success and failure. It is a socially constructed phenomena. It's been determined before we were even born. So can I have a relationship to events, to the other, recognizing there is a gap, this is the question, and looking in the movement without the concept even of success and failure. And therefore in the being and in the response of being, there is an interest. There may be a quiet yearning, which is different desiring and wanting, and finding the appropriate skills and knowledge and kindnesses of the other and in myself to contribute to bridging the gap. I have to be rather patient with these things. And the question is, what is your priority in life? And if it's authentic, and it's beautiful, and it's deep, you will not live without it. If one's quite clear about the priority with one's life, and it is authentic, it won't just come and go as a nice idea in your mindfulness practices, or in your conversations with another. That which is deep and authentic will have a quiet staying power. And we may be, at this time in our life, in the position of just like, what is the priority in life? And if one doesn't know, one needs to be careful of not getting into a lot of chatter, thinking. Because the answer, the response, will not come from the thinking. It can't. The thinking is a product of history. Nearly all the thoughts that we have, we've had them 1,000 times. So the thought, the relationship is, as the tradition will sometimes say, is to look at and see what is original, what is something new. So I sit and I meditate, I do the practices, I quietly engage in an invitation, in this case, what is the priority? I'm willing to live with the gap, I'm willing to explore ways of bridging that gap. Mindfully, meditatively, with concentration, with the goodwill and counsel. Sometimes, this is important, you probably, most of you have heard of Rumi, the great Muslim poet. In Europe, the most loved poet of the last 2 or 3 decades. His books, with various translations, more of his books of poetry have been sold than any other poet. Coleman Barks, who's probably the foremost best-known translator, and one of the well-known one lines, because in the translation of Coleman Barks, is there are 100 ways to kiss the earth, but which is, you know, rather beautiful, and it's a meditation upon. But Rumi is a devout Muslim. The original Arabic is, there are 100 ways to kneel in the mosque. That's the original. And sometimes our temple, to use the religious metaphor, the roof of our temple is the sky, and the floor of our temple is the earth, and the mountains and the trees are the pillars, and we're in this vast, wonderful temple of life. And in this temple of life, it's rich with what it can offer us. And we have this extraordinary capacity, with mindfulness, concentration, meditation, as human beings, to see into this field and to see what touches us. And man came to Rumi, and he said to Rumi, I have a very deep longing. And then he said to Rumi, I have a very deep longing for God, to be with God. And some of you here, the G-O-D word is easy and comfortable for you. The Buddha used the word God, Brahma, many, many times with great appreciation and acknowledgement there. And others of may, the word is not your cup of tea, not necessary to use it. There may be another word or no word. All in your good hearts and minds here. So he says, yearning is beautiful. The spiritual yearning is very, very beautiful in the human. I have this yearning to be with God. But then he said, but I don't know if there is God, even though I have the yearning. Rumi, please help me. And Rumi, beautifully, clearly said, your yearning is the proof of God. You could meditate on this for a decade. There's something beautiful with the human being, that though we have a gap, in this case, the devotee, the yearning to be with God, or truth, or the reality, or the infinite, or the unconditioned, or nirvana, or whatever. Though we may not know, and we don't have to know, if there is. But in the quietness of the being, and we see these expressions of life there, though there may be the object, God, truth, reality, Dharma, creativity, love, compassion, whatever may appeal to us, in the movement of the life, it's important, everything confirms everything else. Life is so interconnected, so deeply interconnected, nothing whatsoever could be separated from anything else. There's no gap. There is no gap. There never was a gap. It's a human fiction. And our distress, and our anger, and our fear, and our blame, and our anxiety has as an underlying aspect to it a belief in a gap. A gap between us, a gap in ourselves, a gap with life, a gap with an object. But there isn't one. It can't be seen. There is no evidence for a gap. It's extraordinary. And there never has been. Everything is interconnected. It is interrelated. It is dependently arising. It is extraordinary. And when we know that, and we know it well because we've mindful of it, we've concentrated on it, we've meditated on it, we've looked at it from here to there, from yesterday to today, from today to tomorrow. We've looked in every area and everything that we can do, we keep revealing this extraordinary web of the interconnectedness of everything. Whew. Does that change our view? Does that give us an extraordinary, fresh way of looking at life and the great web of it? Ajahn Damodara, my Vipassana teacher, we sit in the Dharma hall and sit on what's called the throne. Throne, you know, two words, two meanings in English. It's what the Queen sits on and what we sit on when we're in the toilet. It's the same event, really. You can look at this either way, I don't care. So Ajahn Damodara, Dharma, Daro, power, the teacher with the power of the Dharma. Yeah. My name's rather amusing. I was Prakitisupo, and that's a fellow, because he's a thoroughbred in the Pali language and a very lovely friend and a consultant for me. Kitty means reputation. Supo means beautiful. So it literally means the monk with a beautiful reputation. Try walking around with that name for a few years. Dear, what a life. So Ajahn Damodara, sometimes he would sit and give talks, short and long in the length. And he would say, when we move our hand, and so he really did a very soft gesture, he said, when we move our hand, just very gently, it affects everything else. It has to. And affects everything else right to the furthest stars. We shouldn't underestimate the quiet power of the vibrations and the waves of life and the way they extend out, because there's no gaps. So it has to keep infinitely extending itself in remarkable ways. And it's these small gestures of life which reveal to us the wonder of it all, the extraordinariness of it all. And it would be a pity if somehow or other we've kind of got lost in the gap. Constantly, this is like this, and I only want it to be like that, and this was like this, and just living in that way. That's why we need our singers, we need our artists, we need our poets, we need our spiritual teachers, we need our being, we need the nature, we need the sky above and the earth below, and much, much more. We need the literature, we need the dance, we need all of that which keeps reminding us that we can know a way of life which essentially is one of the ending of the gap. And what's rather beautiful in all of this, of the realizations and the liberation and the awakening of all of this, life is so beautiful, it can still allow for the perception of the gap. That is beautiful. It still allows for it. I can still, as a human being, say to myself, as I do, I'm really interested in this. It might be an area of reflection and research and study. Really interested in going to this place or this, whatever it might be, and there is a gap. I'm really interested in bringing about some changes for the welfare of oneself or others. We can experience the gap, we can know the gap, be respectful of it, and in that respectfulness of it, we can explore it. There's not an inherent problem in the gap. The problem comes is what we put into it. We can live a life of extraordinary interconnectedness, know it is deeply shared, and acknowledge the gap. Doesn't get better than that. Every moment confirms it. It's not a romantic truth. It's not a romantic idea. This is how it is. Let's have a quiet minute together, shall we? May all beings mind the gap. May all beings explore the vast web of interconnectedness. May all beings stay awake. Thank you for lending an ear. Time now is around 4:40. For some of you, walking time, this time, stretch the legs until 5 o'clock. And you may wish to come and engage in the standing meditation in here from 5 to 5:30. And for others, time for some one-to-ones. And then the food, of course, at 5:30. And groups as well. And there are also some groups as well at this time. Thank you. Thank you.